Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 1st, 2022. Potential sale of Shafter Mine leaves future of community's water supply in question. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Shafter. After weeks of rumors about bankruptcy, Shafter locals heard last week that the Shafter Silver Project was in the process of being sold. The small community between Presidio and Marfa, home to 30-odd residents, has long depended on the mine for its water supply. Presidio Silver, the El Paso-based company hoping to purchase the mine from current owner Arcana Silver, confirmed to the Big Bend Sentinel that a deal was in the works, but had not yet been completed. As a public company with Shafter as its primary asset, Arcana is obligated to make a public announcement once a sale is complete. We hope to achieve that before year-end, after an Arcana shareholder vote is held, said Mark Isaacs, manager of Presidio Silver. Presidio Silver's first-year plans include a new water well, but we can't confirm details until on-site post-purchase diligence is complete, Isaacs continued. Presidio Silver will work closely with county officials regarding these efforts, and, of course, will always be available to Shafter residents for in-person visits, he continued. Shafter was founded as a mining boom town in the 1880s, and the population has sharply declined since the 1940s, when Fort D.A. Russell in Marfa was decommissioned. The site of the original silver mine changed hands numerous times over the past century. In 2008, the mine was sold to Arcana Silver, which decided to capitalize on rising silver prices by bringing the Shafter mine back to life for the first time in generations. Arcana's headquarters are based in Canada, and the company operates two silver mines in the United States. Despite much-touted upgrades in the works at their RA location, Arcana stock prices started tanking in the spring, spawning bankruptcy rumors. Shafter locals started to worry. The 25 water hookups in town are all maintained by the mine. Last week, County Judge Cinderella Guevara contacted the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality to get answers. Antonio Manriquez, who oversaw Shafter's water system, told investigators that his last day of work was September 26th. Guevara called a community meeting in Shafter to share the results of her findings, and around a dozen locals gathered in the church to hear about the future of their water supply. "I'm just as concerned as you are," she told everyone assembled. "I have a community in danger of losing its water source." There are a number of emergency measures the county can take. The county recently budgeted for the purchase of a portable tank of drinking water that can be sent to communities in crisis. Everyone agreed that that wasn't a long-term solution. The Shafter well is 900 feet deep, and many people in town depend on the mining company's water hookups. "Can I see a show of hands? Everyone who feels they need an alternate water source?" Guevara asked. Almost everyone assembled that raised their hands. There was a lively discussion about how the community should proceed in order to ensure safe, clean drinking water for future generations. Former Presidio County Judge Monroe Elms suggested that the city incorporate and elect officials, making Shafter eligible for funding through the Rio Grande Council of Governments and other agencies. "Because we would be our own entity, we wouldn't have to rely on the county. We would rely on whoever is mayor," Elms said. Not everyone in the crowd agreed with Elms' proposition. The more middle-of-the-road solution entailed creating a water corporation, like the ones in Candelaria and Redford, two of Presidio County's other unincorporated communities. Water bills to the corporation would go toward environmental regulation and infrastructure. Both towns have state-of-the-art systems, despite how small and remote they are. Shafter resident Martha Stafford agreed that having a water source independent from the mine was a top priority. The previous mine owners stuck around for 15 years, but very little information was known about the new owner. My concern is that in 3 years, he might decide he's throwing good money after bad, and then we're right back where we started, Stafford said. Judge Guevara gathered contact information from Shafter locals and promised to keep in touch with everyone about the status of the water system. At press time, she had not been able to get a hold of the potential new owner of the mine. You all are on the state's radar, she assured everyone. Hospital District hosts first regional EMS solution workshop as Valentine EMS seeks recruits. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. County judges, city officials, and local EMS directors met this week to begin formally discussing the potential creation of a regional EMS entity to serve the entire Tri-County area. The talks are kicking off as a Valentine resident launches efforts to bring emergency services to the tiny town, where locals now find themselves waiting 40 minutes for an ambulance. The workshop, the first of many, was facilitated by the Big Bend Regional Hospital District and focused on whether a regional EMS model could provide more efficient, higher quality services for Tri-County residents, as opposed to the current model in which each community runs its own operation. Staffing and funding are two of the main obstacles affecting the area's EMS providers who work to respond to 911 calls across the vast Big Bend region. This is a very unique region. It's going to be a very unique solution, but we really need to understand what everybody's challenges are. We also need to understand how everybody feels about pursuing this regional model, said J.D. Newsom, executive director for BBRHD. Newsom said medical professionals and political leaders were spurred to start seriously assessing the option of a regional EMS solution after the sudden passing of Alpine EMS director Michael Scudder this past December. In the months following Scudder's death, Brewster County leaders faced the daunting task of quickly securing a new EMS provider to prevent a gap in services. At that time, a regional solution was considered, but ultimately ruled out due to the expedited timeline. That really demonstrated the fragility of a lot of our EMS providers, and everything was great until it wasn't, said Newsom. There's not a lot of depth to our bench of medical providers, so when something happens to one critical person, everything kind of falls apart. Greg Hennington, chief of Terlingua Fire and EMS, whose organization stepped in to run 911 calls in North Brewster County, while county officials sought a more permanent solution, said he was going into the initial brainstorming session with an open mind, understanding each EMS provider has its nuances and issues of how to retain local autonomy and cost-sharing needed to be fleshed out. I think it's good that all of us that are running first responder organizations are getting together in a room for probably the first time in many, many years, said Hennington. The Tri-County area consists of 6 total EMS providers, which vary in organizational and funding structure. Some, like Marfa and Presidio EMS, are city-run. Others, like that of North Brewster County, are run by a private company, Emergent Air, and Terlingua Fire and EMS is a nonprofit organization. All EMS agencies receive some form of subsidies, whether from cities, counties, or in Terlingua Fire and EMS and Jeff Davis County's case, an Emergency Services District, ESD, designation, which allows them to funnel sales tax revenue into emergency services. All the pieces of the puzzle were all jagged-edged, and none of them match because we're all running different operations with different pay scales and different levels of experience, said Hennington. Hennington said in general he supports the regional EMS idea as a possible solution to ongoing staffing and funding issues taking place across the board. Attracting new EMS directors as longtime leaders leave their roles has been a challenge as of late. He himself is seeking a replacement, and financially speaking, running EMS services is costly. Each provider maintains equipment, medications, ambulances, and more. Pooling resources might help cut down on repetitive spending and processes, said Newsom. For example, one central location for medication supplies could allow for buying in bulk and managing expiration dates in one spot, saving money and time, said Newsom. The capital costs for running EMS can be really expensive, and ambulances cost $300,000. I think the idea would be that you could station those capital costs and those ambulances in a more effective manner. I think there's a number of areas that could be more efficient with a regional operation. Newsom said adopting a regional model could also help local training and recruiting efforts for medics and paramedics in the future. The Tri-County area is competing for staff with nearby Reeves County, for example, whose ESD is currently offering $35 an hour for paramedics, higher wages than exist locally. And not all Tri-County EMS providers are able to offer health insurance to their employees, something that could be remedied with a larger operation, said Newsom. By scaling and consolidating operations, we might be able to help with the recruitment of folks when we've got a little bit bigger organization to be able to fund and train and recruit personnel, said Newsom. Jeff Davis County EMS is the only volunteer-run operation and faces the task of recruiting and maintaining adequate levels of volunteer medics to keep their service running. Terlingua Ranch is also recruiting EMS volunteers to help provide immediate care while ambulances are en route. Each EMS operation is also required to be overseen by a medical director, and in many cases those roles have been filled by doctors willing to donate their time, a practice that will soon fall by the wayside, said Newsom. A regional solution could allow for the hiring of one medical director as opposed to the multiple currently required to keep each entity in compliance. Jeff Davis County EMS currently services Valentine, but the remoteness of the town means dangerously long wait times for such services to arrive. Because of this, ambulances are often dispatched from Marfa, which is closer in proximity than Fort Davis, but it's still a considerable distance to travel. This is the problem Kyle LaFerriere is working to address. The Valentine local is currently looking to recruit volunteers who will be trained by Jeff Davis County EMS as either emergency medical responders, who, with 28 hours of training, can administer basic services like CPR and can stop bleeding, and higher tiers of emergency medical technicians who can actually drive an ambulance and transport patients with between 80 and 100 hours of training. Jeff Davis County, which is anticipating the arrival of a new ambulance, will then allocate its retired emergency vehicle to Valentine. My dad, who is elderly with a pacemaker, can't even come down to visit me because if something happens, it's 40 minutes for someone to respond and 40 minutes to get to the hospital, said LaFerriere. His neighbor in Valentine, he added, is a disabled veteran on full-time oxygen. I've been thinking about it and have been concerned about it as long as I have been in Valentine and trying to figure out how I can help with the revitalization of this town of 100 people, he said. LaFerriere said he has already heard from a number of people interested in training, plus folks who are already trained in some capacity who want to offer their services. Training is slated to begin in the fall, he said. LaFerriere said that while he couldn't be in town for the inaugural discussion, he is in touch with Newsom and is interested in talks of a regional solution. On the regional front, the idea to develop a homegrown workforce of local medical personnel by recruiting local high school students or creating a training program in partnership with Sil Ross State University has been floated in the past. Newsom said he is in conversations with the university, but while the school is under new leadership, Carlos Hernandez is acting as interim president after the resignation of Pete Gallego. Operations are still stabilizing, and no major updates can be provided. BBRHD has supported Sil Ross nursing program in the past by helping purchase equipment for a simulation lab with the intention that the lab would also be open for EMS provider training, said Newsom. There are some little bits and pieces that we are working into the fabric of Sil Ross to support our EMS, but it's kind of piecemeal, said Newsom. Other regional EMS operations the Tri-County area might glean some insight from include MedStar, based out of Tarrant County, which serves a total of 14 communities around the Fort Worth area, and Hamilton County Hospital District, which serves a handful of counties in central Texas, said Newsom. The creation of an ESD will likely be considered, as will the possibility of the hospital district running regional EMS. An ESD would likely be funded from property taxes and would need to be voted on by local residents. ESDs also typically include fire in their overall emergency services operations. A precise timeline for the initiative, schedule of regional EMS meetings, and plans for public involvement have yet to be established. The hospital district is actively collecting data, performing a budget analysis to get a better idea of how much a regional EMS operation would cost, and has a public health intern researching the topic. Newsom said in order to have an informed discussion with the public, more research and discussion needed to take place with industry and governmental representatives, but in the future, he anticipates town halls or other public forums will be held to garner public feedback about a regional EMS system. Because this initiative impacts the whole region and it involves a really critical service, I'm definitely going to be urging quite a bit of public participation and input into the process, said Newsom. We want something that's going to be sustainable for the next generation of folks living out here. City Council to support Marfa Public Library and Safer Streets Initiative by Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. At Thursday night's regular meeting, Marfa City Council members passed a resolution permitting city employees to negotiate with the Texas Department of Transportation on the matter of some safety improvements outside the Marfa Public Library, which library representatives say are sorely needed. Bob Schwab, who sits on the library's Board of Advisors, addressed council on the safety concerns currently plaguing the streets just outside the Oak Street building. For one, speeds on Oak Street are excessive, he said. The speed limit starts at 50 miles per hour further east down the state-run highway of Farm Road 1112, then abruptly reduces to 30 miles per hour at Alamito Creek. The speed limit then remains at 30 miles per hour until hitting Highland Street, which Schwab noted was higher than other local streets in Marfa. The Library Board of Advisors is proposing adding one-stop sign at Dean Street, which will be met by drivers going eastbound on Oak Street, and three crosswalks outside the library for increased safety. One crosswalk would cross Dean Street at Oak Street, another would cross Oak Street at Dean Street, and a third would go directly across from the library entrance, crossing Oak Street. The library is also asking that the speed limit on Oak Street, west of Neville Street, be reduced from 30 to 20 miles per hour. Given how many pedestrians cross the street on a regular basis, said Schwab, such changes are necessary. The painted crosswalks give a clear signal to drivers that this is a pedestrian area, said Schwab. This is Marfa's most pedestrian-heavy intersection and area. We have one of our only two clinics, the pharmacy, the post office, of course the library, three of Marfa's parks, private residences, two nonprofits, and three buildings, all of which hold public events and bring a lot of pedestrian traffic. The board was asking for a vigorous representation of these recommendations before TxDOT, said Schwab. The original resolution put before the council asked that members approve the proposed changes. Ultimately, the language was amended to give the go-ahead to negotiate with TxDOT on the specifics. While there was some disagreement between Schwab and Mayor Pro Tem Irma Salgado on what TxDOT was likely to approve, Schwab urged council members to at least bring their requests to the state agency and go from there. I think TxDOT wants to hear what this community wants, he said. We shouldn't try to second-guess what they will or will not approve. Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez, meanwhile, confirmed that drivers tend to speed into town off the state highway, failing to slow down to 30 miles per hour at the speed limit change, and that the issue did raise safety concerns for parents whose kids cross Oak Street. There's a lot of individuals that don't respect the speed limit coming into the city limits, and they're coming in at 50, 40, 45, he said. Schwab said he would also be happy to get petition signatures from neighboring businesses in support of the proposed changes. So far, no one polled had been in disagreement, he said. With the resolution passed, he thanked the council members. You may have saved a life, he said. Marfa ISD maintains a B accountability rating from the state. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Independent School District received a B accountability rating for 2022. According to recently released data from the Texas Education Agency, though its overall score fell from an 87 in 2019 to an 82 in 2022. Ratings were paused in 2020 and 2021 due to the state of disaster brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. Our ultimate goal for the last couple of years was to maintain as much as we could, to maintain our B status, not to drop to a C school, said Superintendent Oscar Aguero of the results. The accountability rating system was established by the legislature in 2017 as a way to provide greater transparency and insight into academic performance of Texas schools for parents, teachers, and community members. Ratings are based on students' State of Texas Assessment of Academic Readiness, STAR, test performance, graduation rates, and college and career readiness, according to the TEA, and broken down into three main categories, student achievement, school progress, and closing the gaps. In the student achievement category, which focuses on STAR exam performance for grades 3 through 12, college and career readiness and graduation rate, the district earned a 72, or overall C rating, down from an 80 and overall B rating in 2019. Aguero said the district was using the new accountability ratings as a motivational tool going into the new school year for their administration and staff, who he said are being instructed to transition from a pandemic mindset and set goals of getting students on track to pass and achieve higher marks on STAR testing. We are now at the point that we believe that we cannot use COVID as an excuse. So that's something we stressed during our prep time before the year, meeting with teachers, said Aguero. These kids are where they are. We are where we are. There's nothing that we can use as an excuse. We have to get better. We have to grow. We have to get back up. MISD's main success was in the school progress category, which jumped from a score of 82 in 2019 to 87 in 2022. School progress is based on STAR reading and math scores measured from year to year and relative performance, or how well students are doing compared to schools with similar levels of economically disadvantaged students. Economically disadvantaged is defined by the percentage of students who utilize the free and reduced lunch program. Aguero said the district currently has 78% of its students classified as economically disadvantaged. Despite the overall higher rating in the school progress category, the relative performance component for MISD declined since 2019, but was ultimately not rated. While we're excited that we had growth, we know there's still lots of room to keep growing and to keep pushing to have all these kids successful on this test, said Aguero. It's a good motivation point for our teachers, our staff, and the kids. The district earned a 71 or C rating in the Closing the Gaps category, down from 100 or an A rating in 2019. Closing the Gaps assesses different student groups in a number of categories based on race, income level, and special education to learn more about how students are performing across the board. Aguero attributed the decline to the district's 2022 STAR math scores for grades 3rd through 8th, which he said the district was already aware of and working toward improving. This year, teacher Cherie Aguero, who previously served as an elementary teacher, is working with 6th through 9th graders on math instruction, as the lower-level grades will maintain their same teacher who joined the district just last year. Aguero said the district was working on pulling professional development resources for those two instructors. Per House Bill 4545, as of 2021, school districts are required to supply students with 30 additional instructional hours per STAR subject failed. Junior high and high school principal Luann Porter said the district is working to achieve that level of additional instructional time by incorporating tutoring into students' daily schedules as opposed to asking students and teachers to be at school outside of regular hours. In terms of college and career readiness, the district is hoping to expand its career and technical education CTE programs, said Aguero, offering business certifications and more in addition to their existing welding course. Aguero said moving forward, the Board of Trustees, administrators, and teachers are working toward getting on the same page about the need for better student outcomes. They plan to emphasize individualizing each student's learning plan while driving them to be self-motivated and invested in their education, said Aguero. And while STAR test scores are just one measure of student achievement, the goal of leveling up instruction would positively impact their students overall, said Aguero. We now have a total understanding and total commitment of what it's going to take to get our students scoring better. I hate that we have to look at it that way, but unfortunately, that's the game we play, said Aguero. But them doing better on this test means there is better teaching, and overall, this is going to prep them for the future. TEA accountability ratings for schools in Texas are available online at txschools.gov. Informational videos for the general public about how these ratings are calculated are available at https://tea.texas.gov/about-tea-multimedia/audio-and-video/answers-in-about-a-minute-f-accountability.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, September 1st, 2022. Guardian List approved at FSISD by Nathan Heuer. Another layer of security is now officially in place at the Fort Stockton Independent School District. The ISD board unanimously approved a list of guardians at their regular meeting on August 29th after deliberation in executive session due to the private nature of the information. Fort Stockton ISD Superintendent Dr. Zamora explained that each guardian went through required training by the state and attained a license to carry a firearm or already had one. They did a course for a license to carry, Guardian Educators Company, hired by FSISD, and the next 2 days they began the course for people who already had achieved a license to carry. It was a 2-day training that was broken up into a morning on the range and then afternoon of instruction, and a final test on the last day. The instructors have to have their credentials to their administrator, the different DPS certification examination and courses. Zamora added that there are strict precautions in place regarding the guardian to ensure the safety of students. Half of the voter approved bond Proposition D from the past May's election will soon be put to use within the Fort Stockton ISD. The district approved the order authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of $1.5 million that is to be used specifically for technology upgrades. Zamora explained that the funds will be used for peripherals within the district, including laptops, displays, projectors, etc. The superintendent added that the time frame for the delivery of the new technology has yet to be determined, but has a potential arrival date by the end of the calendar year. ISD Assistant Superintendent Roy Alvarado will be in charge of the task of approving, ordering, and organizing the installation of the new items. Dr. DeWitt Smith, Executive Director and CEO of Region 18, commended Zamora, the Fort Stockton ISD School Board, and staff for the academic progress the district made for the past school year. We extend many thanks and appreciation for the hard work you and your teams do on behalf of the students, parents, staff, and the greater ISD community. The star academic progress made in FISD this past year is to be commended. As you know, the unique challenge in our regional area are multifaceted. Considering this reality, the progress your students were able to make is even much more exciting. Smith noted three specific improvements that Region 18 recognized, including moving 2D-rated campuses to C or better, improving from D to or F remains in domains in 2019 to 2 in 2022, and for earning a distinction in math at the intermediate school in 2022. One dead in rollover crash. A single vehicle rollover accident on U.S. Highway 67, 20 miles south of Fort Stockton, left one person dead early on August 23rd. Efrain Garcia Palacios of Chihuahua was traveling southbound on 67 at 1:30 a.m. at unsafe speeds before veering into the northbound lanes and borrow ditch, according to the public safety. The crash report revealed that the Nissan Sentra struck a fence and then rolled over. Garcia Palacios, who was the lone occupant of the vehicle, was not wearing a seatbelt and was ejected during the rollover. The driver was pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace, Ruben Salinas.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, August 25th. Lobo coaching legend Gary Gaines passes away. The story was written by Armando Flores. Monday afternoon, news of Gary Gaines' passing swept Monahans like a wildfire. the beloved man and former Lobo athletic director and head football coach, died after a long battle with Alzheimer's disease at the age of 73. A statement from the family read, "Following a long battle with Alzheimer's disease, it is with great sadness that the family of Coach Gary Gaines announces his peaceful passing this afternoon. Memorial plans will be announced in the coming days. Thank you for remembering our family in your thoughts and prayers." Gaines is survived by his wife, Sharon, and his children, Bradley Gaines and Nicole Gaines Stratter, and five grandchildren. Long before gaining notoriety when he took the reins as head football coach at Odessa Permian and led them to a Class 5A state championship, the highest at the time, and USA Today's national championship in 1989, Gaines put Lobo football back on the map, leading them to their first district championship in 7 years, accomplishing the feat in his first season at Monahans in 1983. Gaines was an assistant coach at Monahans under Jerry Larned from 1972 through 1975, later returning to take the top spot for the Lobos program. He led the Lobos to an 8-3-1 season, which included a bi-district title that first year. In 1984, his Lobos went 11-2, losing to Sweetwater in the state quarterfinals in San Angelo. The following season, Monahans went 6-2-2 on the season before Mojo came calling. Born and raised in Crane, Gaines attended Angelo State University after graduation, where he played quarterback for the Rams. He was a four-year letterman from 1967 through 1970 under Grant Taff, who was at Angelo State at the time. Gaines landed his first head coaching job at Petersburg in 1976, where they won the district crown that year. He remained there for two seasons and followed it with coaching spots at Denver City and Amarillo Tascosa before returning to Monahans for the 1983 season. Following his success in Monahans, Odessa Permian relentlessly pursued Gaines. He took over the Mojo football program in 1986 and led the Panthers for 4 years, culminating with a 16-0 record in 1989 and winning the Class 5A state title, the highest class at the time. The team was also named USA Today's National High School Champion the same year. The 1988 season at Permian is chronicled in the book Friday Night Lights, which was later made into a movie and TV series. In 1990, Gaines took a job as linebackers coach at Texas Tech University under Spike Dykes. Gaines returned to the Texas high school head coaching ranks for the 1993 season at Abilene High. He remained there for two seasons before leading the San Angelo Central program from 1996 through 1999. Following the 1999 season, Gaines was named the head coach at Abilene Christian University and remained in that capacity until 2004. Gaines became athletic director for the Ector County Independent School District from 2005 until 2007, then from 2007 until 2009, became the athletic director for the Lubbock Independent School District. He was bit by the coaching bug once again in 2009, returning as Permian's head coach until 2012. Gaines finished with 138 career wins. He was 24-7-4 at Monahans. He was inducted into the Texas High School Coaches Association Hall of Honor in 2013 and the Angelo State University Hall of Honor in 2019. When Gaines left for Permian, he did not leave Monahans empty-handed. His decision in keeping, cultivating, and hiring quality staff proved to be a lasting gift for the Monahans football program's success for many years, with three of his former coaches, Bryn Hollid, Larry Hanna, and Mickey Owens, later occupying the same role as Gaines once had. Holland succeeded Gaines and coached Monahans for 9 seasons. The two had a lifelong and lasting bond. Quote, A truly professional person and coach, Holland said, describing his friend. Attention to detail was always part of his game planning. He was the absolute best at working with his staff and players and treated everyone with respect. He was one of my best friends who played a dominant role in my coaching career. When they list the greatest coaches in Texas football history, his name will be up there with the elite, end quote. Hannah worked for Gaines at Petersburg and Denver City before arriving in Monahan's with Gaines in 1983. He later led Ira Ann to the state championship in 1996 and took charge of the Lobos from 1997 through 2004. Hannah credited Gaines for preparing him to be a head coach. Quote, the knowledge about the game of football was immense, but he set a standard on how to expect perfection and consistency from his players and coaches. He prepared me to be a head coach and to use what he had taught me. We worked hard and long hours, but we knew it had a purpose, Hannah said. The two also had a tree business along with a mutual friend and saw a different side of Gaines away from the gridiron. Hannah said, quote, Gary and I had a tree business with Stan Caffey, and it gave me a chance to really get to know Gary as a person away from the game. He had such a sense of humor and was so loyal to his friends. He added, Gary knew I wanted to be a head coach, and he tried so hard to help me get one. When I applied for the Slayton job, he told me, quote, you have this job if you don't mess up your interview. Well, I guess I messed up the interview. I've said this before, but I have been fortunate to have great people in my life, but Gary Gaines was right at the top, end quote. Gaines also hired a young Angelo State University graduate, giving Owens his first coaching job in 1985. Quote, I will always be indebted to Coach Gaines, Owens said. I was always impressed by how professional he always was and how he treated kids. He was such a role model to us young coaches by his work ethic. There was no doubt whenever he was coaching that his teams were well prepared. End quote. He added, I never read Friday Night Lights or watched much of the movie because I don't think it painted a very good picture of the man he really was. The coaching profession and world lost a good Christian man, and he can't be replaced. End quote. Gaines influenced so many people during his life, and his memories will forever live with those he touched and extend through them to men others for years to come. Rest in paradise, Coach Gaines. Commissioners butt heads over rental fees. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. A heated discussion took place during Thursday morning's Ward County Commissioners meeting over county facility rental fees. The discussion started when Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez asked the court to approve raising the rental price on the Barstow Community Center from $50 to $100. Quote, we have an in-county price of $50 and an out-of-county price of $100 with a $250 deposit, but people from Pecos will get someone in Barstow to rent the center at the cheaper rate and then don't clean it up, Sanchez said. Ward County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, the other county community centers are $50. If I understand you correctly, Commissioner Sanchez, you are wanting to raise the rental price to $100 for the Barstow Community Center with a $250 deposit? Yes, sir, Sanchez said. They should all be the same, Holly said. Quote, I don't want to increase the prices too much, Ward County Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelm said. People won't use the facilities if they're priced too high. Just keep their deposit if they don't clean up. I like my prices where they are, end quote. Quote, I agree that the prices should be the same for all county facilities. We don't want the building setting not being used. I suggest we do $50 rental and $250 deposit with no extra charge for out-of-county, Holly said. A motion was made and seconded to accept Judge Holly's suggestion. After the motion was voted on, Ward County Auditor Ellen Fryer mentioned the county rental price sheet had the old arena price listed. Quote, "The arena rental price shown is the old price for the one that was torn down. The rental should reflect the current rental price for the renovated arena," Fryer said. Holly asked, "What is it renting for now?" Ward County Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols answered, saying, "It's $250 a day." "A day?" Sanchez questioned. "I don't think so," Fryer said. Nelm said, "It's more like $900 a day, which I think is too high, and is the reason it is not being used much, in my opinion," end quote. Holly asked again how much the arena rented for per day. Quote, "It's $600 a day, with a $300 charge for a day on either side of the rented day," Nichols said. "We have talked about this before," Sanchez said. Holly added, "We did talk about it and voted to raise the rental, but it didn't make it onto this schedule. We can talk about this now, and whatever the court decides is fine with me," end quote. "We rent to individuals by the hour, but for bigger events, I think it needs to stay at $900. We have rented it to Grand Falls Cowboys in the past for $500 a night," Nichols added. "It is too high," Nelms said. Nichols told Nelms, "You don't know what we put up with out there." "Yes, I do. I have ballparks that rent to the public and need to be cleaned up after being rented," Nelms said. Holly said, "We need to table this discussion until another day. We have a motion on the table to set the prices of the community center rentals at $50 with a $250 deposit. Do we have a second on the motion?" The motion passed with Nelms abstaining. In other business, the commissioners approved and accepted the resignation of VAG extension agent Kaylee Gillespie. Gillespie came here from New Mexico and is now going to go back there to take a position of Otero County 4-H agent. Quote, "Leaving this position is the hardest decision I have ever made. My year here in Ward County I will always hold near and dear to my heart. However, I felt the financial and personal benefits of this new opportunity were too great to decline," Gillespie said in her letter of resignation. In other actionable items, the court approved budget amendments. A call for a public hearing on the 2023 budget was issued, but there was no response. Also, a call for a public hearing for a tax increase was put forth, with no response from the public. In another item on the agenda, Holly asked the court's consideration for ratifying the property tax increase reflected in the 2023 budget. Quote, "The tax rate of 69 cents per $100 of property value will remain the same. The increase in the property tax for the county comes from the increase in property value," Holly said. Present for the meeting was Ward County Commissioner Precinct 1, Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2, Larry Hanna, Precinct 3, Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4, Eddie Nelms, and Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be September 12th at the Ward County Courthouse, located at 400 South Allen at 9:30 a.m. Council raises trash rates, approve budget. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. After a month-long hiatus, the Monahan City Council met in regular session on Tuesday afternoon to consider a plethora of agenda items, including holding a public hearing on the new budget, awarding bids for the AWOS system at the airport, approving the publicity and tourism agreement, approving the budget, and revising solid waste rates. Leading the agenda was opening a public hearing to hear the proposed 2022-2023 city budget. Quote, "This budget will raise more total property taxes than last year's budget by $234,000, or 15%, and of that amount, $49,600 is tax revenue to be raised from new property added to the tax roll this year," City Manager Rex Thee said. Thee made the announcement that the ad valorem tax rate will remain at 35 cents per $100 of valuation, the same as last year. Even though the tax rate is the same, an increase in property values will produce $234,000 more than last year. The assessed valuation, according to the published budget, is $513 million, up from $446 million last year. The tax rate will produce an estimated tax levy of $1.7 million. The total available funds from all sources from the General Fund and System Fund were stated at $21.2 million. Approved expenditures of $11.8 million is expected to leave an estimated cash balance of $9.1 million as of September 30, 2023. Several members of the public were present for the public hearing, but no one had any comments about the budget. A copy of the proposed budget has been available to the public at City Hall and has been posted to the city website. Since no one had any comments on the proposed budget, council members approved the first reading of Ordinance 1302, adopting the fiscal year budget. A final public hearing for the 2022 proposed tax rate and vote on the tax rate and budget was set for September 13th at 3 p.m. in Council Chambers of City Hall. The full budget detail will be included in an upcoming edition of the news. Along with Mayor Adam Steen and Councilman Jeppy Wilson, Richard Hawkins, Calvin Carroll, Ivy Valenzuela were in attendance during Tuesday's meeting. Councilman Rudy Hernandez was absent. Tax rolls from Ward County Appraisal District for $496 million and $70 million from Winkler County was accepted by the council. The city also acknowledged the Ward County and Winkler County Appraisal District's budgets. Ward County Appraisal District Chief Appraiser budget is $763,000 and Winkler's is $602,000. Quote, the cost share for the city of the Ward County Appraisal District is $14,000 and the cost share of Winkler's is $484, Thies said. In other business, the first reading of Ordinance 1301 to revise solid waste rates was approved. Sanitation rates, solid waste, will increase from $26.83 per month to $28 for a single-family unit for twice-weekly service. Commercial services will increase to $35.30 for twice-weekly service and $22.04 for each additional day's services. Council members also approved the 2022-2023 Monahans Economic Development Corporation proposed operating budget. The budget includes a projected sales tax revenue of $987,000 for the new budget year, combined with a projected beginning balance of $1.1 million, $450,000 in unclassified income, and $2,000 in interest on deposits, leaving a total of around $2.5 million in available funds, a slight decrease from the current budget. The Economic Development Corporation is funded mostly from sales tax revenue, from which they receive 25% of the amount the city receives in sales tax revenue each month. The proposed budget expenditures total $238,000. In other actionable items, the council awarded a bid to install the new Automated Weather Observation System 3 at the Roy Hurd Memorial Airport to Pappas Technology for $119,000. The bid includes one-year maintenance, thunderstrike alert, and ultrasonic wind sensor. The only other bid received was from DBT for $125,000, which was identical to the previous bid. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, September 13th, in the council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Gonzalez pleads guilty to indecency with a child, sentenced to 15 years. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. a Monahans man who was arrested last November on a charge of aggravated sexual assault of a child, a first-degree felony, a crime which allegedly happened in 2011, has accepted a plea agreement which included pleading guilty to a lesser offense of indecency with a child, a second-degree felony. According to court documents, as part of the plea agreement, Jimmy Ray Gonzalez, age 41, of 605 South Kenneth Street, by accepting responsibility for the 2011 crime, Gonzalez would be judged for the lesser offense. Gonzalez appeared in front of 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson on August 16th and waived his right to a jury trial and entered a plea of guilty to the charge. Swanson ordered Gonzalez to serve 15 years confinement in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. He was further ordered to pay court costs of $498 and given credit for 274 days time served. Gonzalez was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on November 17, 2021, after he was indicted on November 12th by the Ward County Grand Jury of the 143rd Judicial Court, charging him with aggravated sexual assault. There are two elements that make a sexual assault case aggravated, the victim being under the age of 14, and the use of threats, force, weapons, or drugs. The indictment stems from an outcry that was made at the police department on July 2, 2021, of a sexual assault which occurred approximately 10 years ago in the 600 block of South Kenneth Street on more than one occasion. The 17-year-old victim, who was 7 years old at the time of the alleged offense, came to the police department to report the abuse. Through the course of the investigation, Gonzalez was named a suspect to the felony crime, and after subsequent interviews with Gonzalez and information received during those interviews, an arrest warrant was issued for Gonzalez. There is no statute of limitations for sexual assault of a child in Texas. Gonzalez will be required to register as a sex offender because the victim was 7 years old at the time of the offense. Garcia given probation for educator and student sex charge. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans woman accused of having sex with a 15-year-old while working as a substitute teacher for Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD has been ordered to serve 6 years on probation. Yulissa Guadalupe Garcia, age 21, of 1702 South Bruce Street, appeared in front of 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson on August 16th and waived her right to a jury trial and entered a plea of guilty to the charge of improper relationship between educator and student, a second-degree felony. Swanson ordered Garcia to serve 6 years deferred adjudication and further ordered her to pay a $1,500 fine and $389 in court costs. Garcia was originally arrested on the charge on May 22, 2018, after Monahans Police Department received a tip stating Garcia was having sex with a student enrolled at MWP ISD. Police later followed up the 15-year-old student, who confirmed the allegations. One day later, Garcia was arrested again and charged with sexual assault of a child, a first-degree felony. As part of the plea agreement, the sexual assault charge was dismissed. Deferred adjudication is a form of plea deal that enables a person to avoid a trial and possible conviction. The defendant can enter a plea of guilty or no contest to a charge in exchange for deferred adjudication, which means the judge doesn't find them guilty, but rather defers any finding of guilt in exchange for the acceptance of an alternative course of action. Any violation of the terms of the agreement could result in Garcia being judged for the offense. Garcia was represented by Greg Holly. According to court documents, Garcia will not be required to register as a sex offender because the victim was over the age of 14 at the time of the offense.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.